network. This is the news. This is the network. This is the news. This is the network. Network.
I'm Tamro in Acre.
And oops, I'm Tamro in Acre, and I'm Tamro in Acre live. We're here with the WGXC morning show, and we're going to speak live to Andy French today. He is the force behind Raven Sings the Blues and the Deep in the Valley Festival that is this weekend with all sorts of great bands in Red Hook. We'll hear about that later this hour. Plus, we'll hear the national headlines from the Public News Service and the local Better Weather from the Catskill Maker Syndicate. It all starts after the local news, which is next on the WGXC Morning Show. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Jack from Songbees, and I'm at the radio station with my sister Katie. You're listening to WGXC Aqua. Have a nice day!
Do you enjoy the arts? Have an interest in art classes and meeting your local creative community? Then join us at the Athens Cultural Center on the first Friday of each month from 5 to 7 p.m. View our latest exhibition over free nibbles and drinks hosted by our ACC board members, and get to know us. We are at 24 2nd Street in Athens and online at athensculturalcenter.org. We look forward to meeting you.
Wave Farm respectfully and humbly acknowledges the past, present, and future Indigenous peoples on whose ancestral lands Wave Farm and WGXC operate and broadcast. The Mohicans name themselves the people of the waters that are never still, following their arrival along the Great Ebb Tide River, also known as the Hudson. The Mohicans stewarded this land over many generations and in dynamic communication and interaction with diverse Indigenous peoples, including the Haudenosaunee Mohawk and the Munsee Lenape. Mohican descendants today live in communities in Ontario, Wisconsin, and Oklahoma. For more information on Mohican history and the contemporary community of the Stockbridge Munsee Band of Mohican Indians, please visit Mohican.com.
Wave Farm's WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Rob Gellis of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
I'm Tamaro in Acre, and you've tuned into the WGXC local news for Wednesday, August 16th. Go to the WGXC newsroom at wgxc.org for more information about any of these stories. Nancy Kern reports for Columbia Green Media that in Columbia County, COVID-19 numbers are high and rising, and in Greene County, they are low and falling. The rolling 7-day average of positive COVID-19 cases in Greene County on August 14th was up 10.2%, but in Columbia County, the number is up 33.3%, according to the New York State COVID-19 testing tracker. Columbia Memorial Health spokesperson William Van Slyke said, quote, "We're not seeing a significant increase in COVID cases at this time," unquote. Greene County Department of Public Health Executive Director Laura Churchill said, "There may be the first signs of an increase there." Churchill said, quote, "The previous 2 weeks had the same levels reported. There's no reporting of self-testing results anymore, but the PCR tests done at the hospitals and urgent cares reflect 18 cases in the past 2 weeks, up from 2 the previous week," unquote. Matt Blanchett, CVS Pharmacy Senior Manager of Retail Communications, said, quote, "While we do not break out data by city, state, or region, I can tell you we've recently seen an uptick in purchases of at-home COVID-19 test kits," unquote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com. Roger Hannigan-Gilson reports in the Times-Union that the latest skirmish between upstate interests and the New York City drinking water is in Delaware County. The tension, again, is with the New York City's land-buying program in the Catskills to protect the water for New York City drinking. Delaware County is asking to lead the review of New York City's land-buying program. The Department of Environmental Conservation is objecting to that request, while New York City's Environmental Protection Department does not even believe the program needs a review at all. In all, New York City wants to buy 137,000 acres, 197 square miles, over the next decade to continue to protect the water supply. Some town leaders in the Catskills have objected to the land buying program since it began in the 1990s, claiming it inhibits growth and strangles property tax revenues. But none of the stakeholders in the decision, the State Department of Environmental Conservation, the State Department of Health, the environmental group Riverkeeper, and the New York City Department of Environmental Protection, believe Delaware County should not have the lead jurisdiction in the review of the program. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Alexandra Zuzu reports in the Times Union that despite what you may have read on the internet, Taylor Swift is not moving to Kinderhook. Kern traces the false rumor to a social media post from Ichabod Crane Middle School co-principal Timothy Farley. The rumor specifically said the pop star was buying the Burgoyne House in Kinderhook. Andrew Gates, associate real estate broker at the Millbrook office of Houlihan Lawrence Incorporated, and the listing agent on that particular house said, quote, "It is unequivocally not true," unquote. Gates said he had heard the rumor before, quote, "but I don't consider this a significant rumor," unquote. Farley deleted the post about 24 hours after posting it and did not respond to the newspaper's request for a comment. The house, a five-bedroom property from 1765 on 6.38 acres, was listed for $2.695 million. Read more about this story in the Times Union. And read more about any of these stories in the WGXC newsroom, wgxc.org.
Welcome to 2023 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I don't have any desire to be first or last. I want to try him and be respectful for our sovereign states. We do want to move this case along, and so we will be asking for a proposed order that occurs a trial date within the next 6 months.
Fulton County District Attorney Fawny Willis spoke about the indictment handed down on Monday for former President Donald Trump and 18 of his allies like Rudy Giuliani, Sidney Powell, and Mark Meadows. Meadows wants to move his case to federal court in the hopes of getting it dismissed under federal law. Republican presidential hopefuls Tim Scott and Ron DeSantis have denounced the indictment, saying it represents the further weaponization of the American legal system. Former Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson said the decision will come down to the voters, adding Trump's actions on January 6th should disqualify him from running for president again. Trump's 2024 presidential campaign has only picked up steam with each indictment. Polling website 538 finds he gained favorability after the indictment in Jack Smith's investigation of the January 6th insurrection was handed down. Scholars argue Trump has warped how scandals affect politicians. Brandon Rodinghouse, a political science professor at the University of Houston, says it is part of the growing shift in politics and noted scandal indicates a need for change.
Scandals are kind of a canary in the coal mine that gives you a sense of how it is that the system is functioning. And then as a result, then you've got these laws that can effectively encourage accountability and require the system to adjust to these kinds of events.
A recent report found disturbing impacts of voter purging in numerous states, including abusive mass challenges to voters' eligibility, faulty removals for felony convictions, and targeting naturalized citizens. More than 19 million records were removed from voter registration rolls between the 2020 and 2022 general elections. Angela Hanks with the think tank Demos describes the best safeguard a person can take against voter purging.
Best safeguard is being able to show up on election day. If you find out at that point that you're unable to cast your ballot, being able to register on the spot, be able to cast a ballot that's not a provisional ballot.
The Maui wildfires are being contained as the search for missing people continues. Deanne Criswell, FEMA's administrator, says the recovery of Maui will be a whole of government approach. The agency is working to get critical needs assistance funds into the hands of Hawaiians to provide an initial $700 for food, water, first aid, medical supplies, and other necessary items. She also noted FEMA's Transitional Sheltering Assistance Program has been made available for displaced residents.
This is FEMA's hotel program, and this will allow them to move from shelters into pre-identified hotels or motels temporarily as they develop their long-term housing strategy.
I'm Edwin J. Vieira for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. In a follow-up to our past reports on Coffee County, Georgia, Monday's RICO indictment of former President Donald Trump includes evidence of alleged coordination of voting machine tampering by Trump's legal team and indictments of the lead actors involved in the alleged access to and tampering with the county's ballot tabulation machines. Indicted attorney Sidney Powell allegedly initiated the effort to breach Coffee County's voting data by hiring Atlanta legal tech firm Sullivan Strickler to coordinate the tampering effort. Tampering suspect Scott Hall has been charged with conspiracy, computer trespass, conspiracy to commit election fraud, among several other charges. Coffee County Elections Director Misty Hampton, who allegedly invited and gave access to the tampering team, faces similar charges. Also among the indicted is Kathleen Latham, then chair of the Coffee County GOP, who faces the same computer trespass and conspiracy charges, but also impersonating a public officer, forgery, and filing false statements charges. Notably absent from the indictment were Doug Logan, founder of Cyber Ninjas, and Paul Maggio, mentioned only in the indictment as chief operations officer of Sullivan Strickler LLC, whom the indictment indicates was the point person at the firm and was allegedly present in the Coffee County Elections Office. Logan has not been charged in either Georgia or Michigan. We have a link to the indictment at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
Hello and welcome to the better weather for Wednesday, August 16th. Local early morning temperatures range from 62 degrees in Tannersville to 68 in Red Hook. Regional average soil temperature is 72 degrees. Grass pollen is moving back up into medium territory. Rain generally comes to an end today by noon, but chances of seeing some raindrops remain all afternoon. And we see a high of 79 at 4 p.m. Overnight, humid conditions with random raindrops continue, and we see a low of 65. Tomorrow, rain really shows up in the afternoon, and we get a high of 80. The rain continues overnight as temperatures drop to 66 degrees. Friday, rain is still around, but ends by dark. We get a high of 78. Saturday is looking very comfortable with a moderate dew point and a high of 77. Today's tide schedule is high tide at 3:41 a.m., low tide at 10:27 a.m., high tide again at 4:13 p.m., and low tide once again at 10:25 p.m. Today's river temperature will be 75 degrees and the tide strength will be high. Sunset today will be at 7:43 p.m. Sunrise tomorrow will be at 6:01 a.m. Looking way up, we see the current solar cycle seems to have relaxed just a bit, and while there's a bunch of sunspots, they're all pretty stable. Plasma winds will be slow at 292 kilometers per second with an average density of 5 protons per cubic centimeter. Radio propagation conditions are currently fair below 4 megahertz till dark, then fair across the board overnight. The current sunspot number is 107, and this has been The Better Weather, brought to you by the Catskill Makers Syndicate.
One speeding ticket, Columbia County.
Columbia County, everybody gets speeding tickets. How else do they pay for the roads to get plowed in the winter?
Sun Watchers there with the Conch from their 2020 album, Oh Yeah. You're listening to the radio WGXC 90.7 FM. And joining us now is Andy French, who is behind the RavenSingsTheBlues.com website and the Deep in the Valley Festival that is this weekend in Red Hook with Sun Watchers performing and a bunch of other people too. Andy, are you there?
I am. Hi. Hi, Tom. How's it going?
How's it going today? And how is this festival going? You must be excited about Saturday arriving at last.
I am. Yes. Yeah. It's been a long time planning, and we're just about there. I'm just about ready for Saturday. Absolutely.
Tell folks first what Raven Sings the Blues is.
Sure. I started Raven Sings the Blues as an MP3 blog way back about 17 years ago when that was still a thing. And it grew into a daily music review site over the years. That primarily focuses on psych, folk, jazz, experimental, indie strains of music. It's kind of been a labor of love for many, many years.
And it seems like those genres are all well represented this weekend at Deep in the Valley?
Yeah, the spirit of the site is reflected in what I had set up as the festival. It kind of took shape out of bands that I saw that weren't necessarily festival fodder. They were the kind of bands that were going to fill out a huge top line, big music festival these days, but who really had a very dedicated core audience and embraced the idea of fluid genre styles and more of like a blurring the lines of genre, as it were.
And tell folks who is performing Saturday at where is it in Red Hook? Tell us about the location too.
This year we're back at From the Ground Brewery, who are great and have embraced us wholeheartedly. They are in on the Migarelli Orchard in Red Hook, and this year the festival will have Riley Walker, we'll have $75 Bill, Garcia Peoples, Sun Watchers, like you said, the return of local Weeping Bong Band, who haven't played in I think at least 5 years or more, Ned Collette, who is Australian but now based in Berlin. He'll be playing with Elizabeth Fusilla on viola for this performance. Chicago's Gliders will be there, and Massachusetts band Gold Dust will round out the lineup this year.
Very exciting lineup of all sorts of bands that people have heard on WGXC and are just a lot of them have ties to the Hudson Valley or seem like they're playing here a lot.
Yeah, I would say that, especially Garcia Peoples, I think quite a few are around here these days. That Weaving Bong Band, it definitely has ties, with Pat Gubler, who is around here, and Wednesday Beebson and Clark Griffin are all in there. $75 Bill is definitely, they come to the area both in their larger form, and then this weekend they're going to perform in their duo form, in which they kind of play off each other and work on their songs that way.
And Riley Walker, he plays with all sorts of people, doesn't he?
Yeah. Riley's collaborated with everyone from Kiki Gakumoyo to Chris Forsyth. He's a guitarist and songwriter that's had a long journey, and I think honestly these days Riley's really playing at his best. His last album was probably one of my favorites of the year. I think it came out last year. And I'm excited he's going to come and he's going to play in trio formation with Andrew Scott Young and Ryan Jewell, who is another one who has been all over the Hudson Valley and has moved to quite a lot of the bands that crop up on Raven Sings the Blues.
Yeah, that sounds like an excellent band for him to play with on Saturday. You've also got some Green County food coming out.
Yeah, the Gracie's Truck will be out there. They came out last year, and they're going to return this year. And we will also add this year We'll have a record fair on site. There'll be four or five tents full of used records that people will be selling as well.
Oh, that's exciting. We didn't mention, or I don't know if we explicitly said, this is the second year you've done the festival, so that's the major change from last year, that you've added the record fair?
Yeah, that's the major expansion this year. You know, it's give a little bit of a marketplace and, something else for people to do. Although with the sets come pretty fluidly, but there'll be a little bit of downtime to browse for sure.
And the... is the farm open? Can you go apple picking during the show?
I don't know if they're going to have apple picking during that time. I think
it's a little early for apples yet, I think.
It might be a little early in the season for that, but the beer garden will be open, and they'll have their full line of craft brews out there. From the Ground is a great place. They source a lot of their ingredients from the farm that they're located on, and I think that's a real special thing about what they do.
And what is the timing of the event?
The doors will open up at 11:30, and we'll have music start at 12:30 noon, and the show will go on until about sunset. The last set will start around 7:30, and then we'll play out through as the sun sets, which will be nice. It was beautiful last year.
It sounds like a lovely day. Where can people go for more information?
Absolutely. You can go to ravensingstheblues.com/valley to check out tickets and hear some of the artists that are going to perform on the site.
All right. Let's hear from one of those artists now. Here is Garcia Peoples with Cold Dice on WGXC playing this Saturday at the Deep in the Valley Festival. Thank you, Andy.
Thank you, Tom.
All right. Well, here is Garcia Peoples.
Die is cast, the end is here.
Garcia Peebles on the radio at WGXC 90.7 FM. I'm Tom Rowe in Accra, and next we are going to hear from Jillian Hermansky, who wrote her master's thesis on community radio, and she spoke recently with our friends at WOOC in Troy.
My name is Jillian Hermansky, and I graduated from the School for International Training. The program was a master's in sustainable development.
So you are somewhat of an expert on community radio. Can you tell our listeners about your master's thesis?
Sure. Well, initially, I was interested in the topic of the digital divide, but didn't know where to go for that for my master's. And then I had the pleasure of traveling for residencies to Oaxaca, Mexico, and Nepal, and visiting some community radio stations. I was just fascinated by the stations and the staff and hearing about how they impact their communities and doing so without having any limitations, without being connected to the internet and hearing about that impact. So that kind of put the idea together to, we'll look at the United States. I didn't know what the status was of community radio and wondering of how community radio looked in the US and if it could similarly be used as a tool for community development in the US.
So you were looking at the digital divide as a concept, and you had the opportunity to travel to both Mexico and Nepal and interact with people involved in the community radio stations in the two cities that you visited. Mm-hmm. And it made you aware that there was community radio happening in the US too. And it sounds like your research focused specifically on the US. Is that the case?
It was very much focused just on the US, but considering other studies that had taken place as part of my initial research from abroad and elsewhere.
So what was your research?
My research statement was a focus of how can community radio be used as a tool for community development? And so I went into two focuses, one of how community radio stations viewed the digital divide and if they directly saw themselves as a tool to kind of overcome elements or limitations of the digital divide within their communities. But then I also wanted to see if community radio stations could identify the direct development or community development benefits that they had within their communities, and also indirect benefits that would kind of just come about in conversation. So that's where I approached the study.
How many radio stations did you look at?
I initially reached out to 285, both FM and low power FM stations. And then I heard back from 55 from the survey. And then I don't recall the exact number, but it was between 12 and 20 for the virtual interview.
What did you find?
A lot of great information. One, most importantly, that everyone was so excited about the research itself.
Yes.
Unsurprisingly, I think everyone in community radio was very excited to just speak about the subject and very much excited to engage. So there was a lot of different ways and a lot of different data I wanted to collect in the study. So I started with just kind of learning as a newcomer to the subject myself, more about the structure of community radio relevant to the design of a station. What was the listenership? What's the station? How's it structured? How's it made up? What are the barriers of community radio? And then I also looked at its connection to the digital divide. Were the stations aware of a digital divide? Were they aware of its impact in their community? Did they see themselves as a tool to overcome its limitations? And then I really dove the most deep into those direct development benefits. And prior to the study and sending out the survey, I had actually identified 12 direct development benefits that I found previously in the research. And I wanted them to kind of to respond in different ways, whether it was on more of a quantitative scale question, and then more of a qualitative short answer question. And then if they had agreed to interview with me more in that discussion to really see what of those benefits stood out. So in my study, I had actually had 7 of the 12 direct development benefits that received over 75% or more response as very clear direct development benefits that all the stations had. Of those 55 stations had agreed, these are clear sources as community radio as a direct development to their communities. So I'm happy to discuss in any of those areas a little bit more from what I had found, but it covered a lot of different topics as the study itself, and was exciting kind of to pull all those results from the study.
So understanding that our listeners right now are listening on their own community, local community radio stations here in the Capital Region of New York, what piece of what you found do you think that they would find most interesting?
In the study, I was excited by the how diverse the bullet participants were. They came from the urban, rural, tribal land community radio stations. And so one example that I found particularly interested that really speaks to this local lens is there was a farm worker community radio station, and it very much tailored to the farm worker community. So it would have broadcasting in the morning, speaking specifically maybe about the weather, like something relevant to the land, but then it would also speak towards this tailored content towards farm worker activism or the farm worker labor movement. And just seeing how much this community radio could maybe, for someone who's not within that community, speak about other subjects that one might assume that community radio speaks about, but then realizing this one was so much focused on that local lens and how much it built that community and strengthened that community, that was just such a unique insight to see as part of the study. So that was interesting roles I found. That one was, I can't share as part of the I can't actually recall the moment, but there is some elements of keeping things anonymous as part of the study.
Yeah.
So that was all protected as part of that, one of those elements.
I know a couple of the community radio aficionados in our audience are gonna already know wherever it is.
Yeah, I assume there's some very popular ones out there that ended up choosing to join. So I imagine this will be known. Yeah.
We're a passionate community. What was the most surprising thing that you found, if anything?
I don't know if it's as this was maybe connected more to the digital divide, but and it sounds more familiar to what I heard relevant to my residencies when I was abroad, but relevant to the digital divide of hearing kind of that disconnect and knowing that the digital divide is still very much prevalent in the US, but hearing about community stations more in rural areas or have a very rural audience of that. It's this that community radio plays this broader role in the community, that it's not just this venue for sharing information, sharing or other direct development benefits. So it could be this venue for individuals in community reaching out if they need support or some type, well, mainly support was the most unique one. So one example that I remember a radio station gave was individuals who might have a doctor's appointment within the community, but they don't have access to transportation and they don't even have close family or someone who lives by that could care for them. So they might call into the station and say, hi, I need a ride. I have a doctor's appointment coming up on Tuesday. And that radio station will put a note out to their community. And then someone in the community will reconnect, go out, meet the person and bring them in for their doctor's appointment. So just, I think hearing that level of togetherness and community. Yeah, it was just great to hear, but that surprised me. And because it had that level of the digital divide as well.
Very cool. Yeah.
Connectedness.
That's inspiring. Thinking back to the time you spent with community radio stations in Nepal and Mexico, do you see parallels to there, how those stations operated and the stations you spoke to in the US, or cultural parallels, subculture?
Some cultural parallels. I will say that, and I say this lightly because I didn't research the ones abroad as in depth that I researched the ones in the US. So it's hard to really compare, but culturally, just the dependence of the community radio stations I got to see in far more detail abroad, and then just hear about it in more briefly in the US. So it's hard to compare culturally, but there was such a dependence on the community radio stations, especially in Nepal, for communicating with all the different co-ops and the different groups on a wide variety of topics, whether it was health or agriculture or anything. Especially given certain social movements, which I had plenty of discussions with community radio stations in the US around social movements, and I know that they play a important role there, but it was so interesting, such as Oaxaca, Mexico, hearing about very important political movements in the past and the role community radio played, which is why they were so heavily tied in with my program. I know how important the role community radio plays in a lot of histories, and especially in US history as well, and that was just very evident as something that's the history of the role community radio played in abroad, how it's carried throughout its own place in its community. And that's something I would like to hear more or learn more personally in US history. And so that's one interesting I saw culturally more abroad that I might just not know enough myself.
Yeah, I know some folks would be happy to talk to you about that. Thank you, Jillian.
Thank you.
All right, next we have a long-distance dedication to a former president who might be needing some legal help.
He was on his way home from Candletop. Been 2 weeks gone and he thought he'd stop at Webb's and have him a drink before he went home to her. Andy Wolo said hello and he said, hi, what's doing, whoa, said, sit down, I've got some bad news, it's gonna hurt. Said, I'm your best friend and you know that's right, but your young bride ain't home tonight. Since you've been gone, she's been seeing that Amos boy, Seth. Got mad and he saw red. And Andy said, boy, don't you lose your head, 'cause to tell you the truth, I've been with her myself. That's the night that the lights went out in Georgia. That's the night that they hung an innocent man. Well, don't trust your soul to no backwoods southern lawyer, 'cause the judge in the town's got bloodstains on his hands. Well, Andy got scared and left the bar, walking on home 'cause he didn't live far. See, Andy didn't have many friends and he just lost him one. Brother thought his wife must have left town, so he went home and finally found the only thing Papa had left him, and that was a gun. He went off to Andy's house, slipping through the backwoods quiet as a mouse. Came upon some tracks too small for Andy to make. He looked through the screen at the back porch door, and he saw Andy lying on the floor in a puddle of blood, and he started to shake. Well, the Georgia patrol wasn't making their rounds, so he fired a shot just to flag them down. And a big belly sheriff grabbed his gun and said, why'd you do it? And the judge said guilty in a make-believe trial. Slapped the sheriff on the back with a smile. Said, supper's waiting at home and I gotta get to it. That's the night that the lights went out in Georgia. That's the night that they hung an innocent man. Well, don't trust your soul to no backwoods southern lawyer, 'cause the judge in the town's got bloodstains on his hands. Well, they hung my brother before I could say the tracks he saw while on his way to Andy's house and back that night were mine. His cheating wife had never left town, and that's one body that'll never be found. See, little sister don't miss when she aims her gun. That's the night that the lights went out in Georgia.
Oh, 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 that's a night that they haunt an innocent man. Oh, 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 don't trust your soul and no backwoods southern lawyer. Cause the judge in the town's got blood stains on his
There are so many events in the WGXC community calendar if you're looking for something to do this week. Or if you are working on an event and want to help publicize it, you can add an event. Click on the Add an Event button at the WGXC community calendar and hear your event read on the radio and seen around the world in the WGXC community calendar at WGXC.org. On Wednesday, August 16th, the Catskill Town Board Committee meets 6:30 p.m. at the Catskill Town Hall. And if you can't be there in person, they have a live web stream on the WGXC website at WGXC.org. Another event with the WGXC website is Wednesday, August 16th. The bands Cellular Chaos, Bleeders, and Doubles perform at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. That's from 8 to 11 p.m. with a live web stream at WGXC.org. Thursday, August 17th, Hudson's Thursday Market is at the Public Square from 4 to 7 p.m. with all sorts of local farms coming out with wares, as there are all sorts of vegetables coming in now. Thursday, August 17th at 6 p.m., William Abronowitz is doing a book signing and reception at the Hudson Milliner. That's at 415 Warren Street from 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursday. Also Thursday, August 17th, the bands E-Block and Jack Lizard perform at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. E-Block is a five-piece indie R&B band based in upstate New York, and Jack Lizard is a singer-songwriter. That's from 8 to 11 p.m. at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, and if you can't be there in person, WGXC has a web stream at WGXC.org, and I think the first hour at 8 p.m. is going to be on 90.7 FM, too, as well as the entire show with a web stream at WGXC.org. There's a community Narcan training Friday, August 18th in Henry Hudson Waterfront Park from 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. from Columbia County Pathways to Recovery with State Senator Michelle Hinchey and others. The bands Camp St. Helene and Kendra McKinley perform at Opus 40 at 6 p.m. on Friday, August 18th. Saturday, August 19th, there's a community care clinic at the Hudson Area Library from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. with acupuncture, herbal medicines, fentanyl test strips, and more. Saturday, August 19th is the Deep in the Valley Festival. That's at the From the Ground Brewery in Red Hook, put on by Raven Sings the Blues from WGXC's Andy French. This year it features Riley Walker, $75 Bill, Garcia Peoples, Sun Watchers, The Weeping Bong Band, Gold Dust, Ned Collette, and Gliders. That's from 11:30 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturday, August 19th at the From the Ground Brewery in Red Hook. Saturday, August 19th is also the Catskill Saturday Ukulele Jam from 1:30 p.m. to 3 p.m. at the Catskill United Methodist Church. Wheelhouse Creative Education Center is having a summer party Saturday, August 19th from 2 p.m. to 5 p.m. at their new location in Acre. That's Wheelhouse Creative Education Center, Saturday, August 19th, 2 to 5 p.m. in Acre. Also Saturday, August 19th, in Crellin Park in Chatham, the Namukanama Circus is performing from 4 to 5 p.m. on Saturday, August 19th. Saturday night, Atabeo Kitani and DJ Shaman Vibes perform at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. That show starts early and ends late, 8 p.m. to 1 a.m., and there should be a live web stream at WGXC.org if you want to listen online. Then on Sunday, August 20th, the Jazz in the Valley Festival is at Juarez Park in Poughkeepsie from noon to 6 p.m. with Louis Hayes, Javon Jackson Band, Sonido Solar, and others performing. There's also the Handmade Leather Mask Market at the Circle Creative Collective in New Paltz from 1 to 4 p.m. on Sunday, August 20th. And the Traditional Irish Music Session, that jam is at 2 to 5 p.m. at the Shamrock House in Durham every Sunday. Find out more about these events and many others in the WGXC community calendar online at WGXC.org.
Let's kick off, and a real simple question. What do you think is important for us to understand when it comes to Black August and the month of August?
You know, I think it's important for folks to understand that, you know, unlike some other holidays, it's not about celebrating so much as it's about remembering, learning, and disciplining yourself in this fight for justice. I think, like, far too often we get this idea that we're going to throw a party around these dates, and we lose, I think, the connection to what that history really means and the fight that has been going on for generations and the shoulders of those that we stand on. Like, remember, we're talking about folks that lost their life, right? George Jackson was murdered on August 7th. His brother is murdered on August 21st. You know what I mean? And we're talking about revolution for freedom and liberation. So there's this, it's really a lot, I think, to grasp. We don't do enough of that as far as educating people in our society, period, and definitely not amongst Black folks. It's a time to be disciplined and remember and do the work.
In the spirit of remembrance and education, moments like these are also about building community, right? A lot of times our people, especially, you know, Black and brown, are often missing important pieces of history to inform them not only of what has occurred in the past, but also what is happening now in our continuous fight against the oppression that we face together as one. So building community and being collective in this sense and educating one another is essential to overcoming this oppressive system and liberating ourselves, us as a people, as we continue to endure the impacts that we face.
Are there any dates that you want to lift up as it relates to our resistance and the fight and education?
An important date to lift up is August 18th, 1965, in which the Voting Acts Right was signed by President Lyndon B. Johnson. This is important, especially for right now. Today, we are still currently under attack when it comes to voter suppression and ways to kind of like prevent Black and brown people from taking the polls and having autonomy in the civic process that occurs. So the Voting Acts Right helped Black people gain access to the polls by eliminating literacy tests and other forms of suppression and barriers that prevented us from being able to kind of like become autonomous beings. So this is especially important even today as it stands as we continue to face voter suppression.
Absolutely. That's something we've talked about quite a bit as all of us, the both passive and blatant voter suppression that happens. Are there any other dates, Sean?
I mean, and there's so many different dates in August that we can point to. You know, just the acts of resistance, right? When I say that, I'm thinking about the Haitian Revolution. I'm thinking about Nat Turner and Gabriel Prosser and so many others who actively resisted their captors. My education around this history when I was much younger basically didn't talk about any of that, right? Like, we were enslaved and then we were freed. We didn't really have a whole role in that. You know what I mean? But we may talk about Harriet a little bit and one or two others, but the idea that, which they're now pushing in Florida, right, with DeSantis, that somehow, you know, this back to this, the days of we were the happy-go-lucky, you know, kind of Blacks on the farm who were gaining something out of enslavement and were happy to be enslaved by their captors. So those acts of resistance that dot the history of this country and the country before that it got revolted against, so from 1619 to today, there's been active resistance from Africans and the African community and pushing back against their captors. And we need to know those stories because understanding your history is important to how you identify today, right? How you think about your world and your place in it. Much of the history that I grew up with, by not talking about that, left the idea out there that somehow we were unworthy or deserving of that treatment, that we were weaker for a whole host of reasons. I think that, you know, James Baldwin, you know, talks about our heroes, and he talks about Nat Turner and all of them, and he talks about them, and he says that if it wasn't for racism, like, my heroes would be your heroes, right? You would celebrate Malcolm X more. You would celebrate Nat Turner for his resistance and the way he fought and lost his life for freedom of himself and his people. You would acknowledge that in history, and they would be heroes too. They'd have big blockbuster cinema, you know, movies being told and retold, you know, through Hollywood's imagery. So it's important to understand resistance for me.
Thank you for that. It doesn't mean that Black folks are the only folks that are facing this, but we were one of the first, right? And it set a blueprint for the ability to marginalize others. And so for all of us to be able to thrive and no one struggling to survive, as I often say, then we must know our history, right? And it's the study, the four principles of Black August: fast, study, train, and fight. And we are heavy on the study this year, looking at our history, talking about the Voting Rights Act, being educated on systems and structures. So along with that, what do you all see as ways that it can be Black August 365? After we get to August 31st, how do we keep going forward? How do we maintain that momentum?
I think moving forward, finding different ways to engage the community and have in-person conversations where people are provided the opportunity to speak to one another, express their thoughts, and kind of like connect more on a human level.
Yeah, I like that. You know, we just came from an event, Making of a Man, right? It was a room full of Black professionals and young, aspiring professionals, and then some younger, young people that were still in school, junior high school, et cetera. And they got to hear from some of the best of us, like most some of us that have succeeded in business and other ways in life, and heard about like how that happened and how to connect. Like, that's a little bit about what you're talking about, right? Like finding those spaces to connect with our community and connect with those who have achieved, who are reaching back to make sure that, you know, we have an opportunity to follow in those stupids because they blazed some of those trails.
A lot of times when we do think about those type of engagements, we tend to visualize it in one perspective, but it's a lot of different ways that we can utilize. For instance, at that event, we had a facilitation group in which they taught us how to tie ties.
Things like this in our community
are needed, right? You know, when I was younger, I never saw myself as someone wearing a tie or a bow tie, anything like that. But as the method of learning and knowing and understanding, like, what life has to offer and the type of spaces that I can be in if I understand the dynamics of what's going on in my position in the world, you know, nothing is impossible. You know, I don't have this particular type of look. I'm not someone who's just destined to be sitting in a cell or in an oppressive circumstance. And tying my tie, it was fun. It was a different way of having fun and learning collectively with my fellow peers.
And it is part of that history, right? All of it is how we see ourselves based on the images that we've seen and not necessarily the history we know, the history of resistance that started in 1619. There was no moment that we were not resisting, as well as that we don't know the history of the communities we created, right? Tulsa, Oklahoma, Black Wall Street, Central Park in New York City wasn't always Central Park, right? Across the United States, there were abundance of Black communities of folks being pushed out of because of their success, right? That when we as Black people were doing well, it wasn't us that stopped us from doing well. It was taken from us because of our success, and that we've been taught to run. We've been told to be better, you should leave your people. You should go someplace else, go to another community, instead of looking for those opportunities to invest in ourselves and to work collectively. And I do agree with you that these increased community spaces, right, whether it's online or in person, is the opportunity for it to be Black August 365, for us to remember the four principles, to talk about not just the beginnings, but all of the dates in August, and remind ourselves how we continue to resist against oppression, exploitation, and all of the ways that systems and structures cause harm, and that there is unity, right? One of Sean's favorite quotes, if you've come here to help me, I'm gonna paraphrase, be gone. But if you come because your liberation is bound up with mine, let's get it. Yeah. That's not the exact quote, but that is the sentiment.
That's the spirit, though. That's the spirit. That's the spirit of it. That is the spirit.
Next, we'll hear 2023 new music from jazz legend Kamisi Washington. This is from the limited series A Small Light. It's called Cheryl from Kamisi Washington on WGXC.